Hello there. Today is Thursday, February 1st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, the controversy heats up over a secret memo related to the Russia investigation. A train carrying Republican lawmakers and their families crashes into a truck.
All of a sudden, we had a big jolt. Didn't know what we hit. Knocked several people down.
Actress Angelina Jolie fights to stop sexual violence as a weapon of war.
This is not only a question of protecting women. This is a question of valuing women.
Also ahead, details about singer Drake's just-released new single. It's all on today's International Edition. The Federal Bureau of Investigation warned Wednesday it has grave concerns over the accuracy of a secret congressional memo that could depict the agency as deeply politicized, as President Donald Trump's top aide signaled the White House would allow the document's release. Based on highly classified information, the four-page memo written by Republican lawmaker Devin Nunes, the chair of the House Intelligence Committee, suggests the Justice Department and FBI abused their power in running surveillance on a member of Trump's election campaign in 2016. The Justice Department and the FBI have actively lobbied against its release, which has the potential to taint the special counsel investigation. The FBI is stressing its concerns in the unsigned public statement that demonstrated its growing rift with Trump and Nunes, a staunch defender of the president. Joining us now to understand all of this is Robert Dietz, professor of public policy at the Schar School of Public Policy at George Mason University. Thank you for being with us. What do you think of this whole issue?
In order to talk about this, one has to make some assumptions. I've not seen the memo. One person I know told me what his understanding of what was in the memo. Now, that's, you know, like 15 degrees from truth. But nonetheless, this person's understanding is that the memo attempts to undermine the integrity of the investigation by pointing out various failures with respect to other investigations, particularly including the Clinton inquiry. So that's pretty much what I'm aware of.
What is your view on the FBI talking about grave concerns about the accuracy and the national
security? Grave concerns is a euphemism. It's a polite euphemism for saying that the memo has no factual foundation.
So the director of the FBI, appointed by President Trump, is telling him it's not accurate. He has concerns about accuracy, basically. Don't release it. And the president apparently was caught on mic telling another Republican lawmaker that he's going to release it.
Sure. I mean, you know, that's not really surprising. My general read of what's going on is that you work very hard, if you're in President Trump's position, to undermine the nation's confidence in institutions. And as you know, so far there have at least been two or three, depending on how you count institutions. First, the foreign intelligence community. Second, the press. And third, the Mueller inquiry / FBI. Such that if a scathing report comes out of Mr. Mueller's office, he can say, or his people can say, see, what have we been telling you all along? This is a big conspiracy against President Trump.
But, well, first of all, there are two issues here. One is that apparently there was another memo, a Democratic memo, that sort of discredited all the things in the Republican memo, but
right.
The House Republicans would not allow that release. So,
well, I'm not sure what that means. When you say not allow, we do have a First Amendment. I guess the only way I can interpret it is that it is classified or you know, uses classified information that supposedly the Republican memo has, and in that sense cannot be released, but all of that can be redacted and that report released. See what I mean?
Right. It just certainly has all the markings of very partisan.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But look, remember, Mr. Nunes, very early on, went down to the White House to explain to Mr. Trump what was going on in his committee's investigation.
So ultimately, if the president does decide to release this after being warned not to by the head of the FBI, does that sort of permanently damage the credibility of our institutions?
Well, that's a great question. Of course, I don't really know the answer to that. My instinct is that we've got strong institutions. One of the great things we got from, you know, the great English political philosopher John Locke was trust institutions, not people. And we have strong institutions. And, you know, and thank God for it. Now, institutions certainly in the long run or even in the medium run can be harmed. So that's a great question to ask. I'm worried about it, but I'm not ready to say, yeah, the FBI has been permanently harmed. Bear in mind, Watergate did not put the FBI in a very good light. And it survived, and once they got rid of J. Edgar Hoover, actually, you know, has re-earned the respect of the American people.
So continuing along the lines of this whole Russia investigation, which
yes.
we know the president is pretty much infuriated about,
yep.
there are new reports, unconfirmed at this point. CNN is reporting that the president at one point asked Rod Rosenstein, the deputy attorney general who was overseeing Robert Mueller, the special counsel, that President Trump asked Rod Rosenstein if he is on his team, meaning basically asking for...
Right, are you loyal to me?
Right. If that's true, is this just another indication that we are heading toward a slippery slope here with this investigation?
I know Rod, and I've worked with him. I don't know him well, but I've worked with him and have enormous respect for him. All these folks, Mr. Comey, Bob Mueller, Rod, they all know that when they take office, they pledge allegiance to the Constitution, not to President Trump. And so I don't take much from that. Obviously, if the president then thinks that he's not sufficiently loyal, he can fire him. I think that would cause a firestorm, and I think Mr. Trump knows that, or at least people around him have said that. So I don't think it's terribly likely, but, I mean, God knows it's certainly possible.
All right. Well, we appreciate your perspective. Thanks so much. That is Robert Dietz, professor of public policy at the Schar School of Public Policy at George Mason University. And by the way, President Trump hasn't yet released the memo, but there are some reports to indicate he may do so later today. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. A doctor injured in Kabul in a bombing tended to his own wounds and then helped hundreds of other victims. Rights groups criticized Trump's move to keep Guantanamo open. As trade tensions rise with the U.S., China prepares to retaliate. African leaders almost demanded an apology from Trump for his crude remarks. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. One person was killed and several others injured Wednesday when an Amtrak train carrying Republican members of Congress collided with a garbage truck in southwestern Virginia. Representative Bradley Bynes was on the train.
Next thing I realized is that we were slowing down significantly and coming to a stop, and that's when we all knew we hit something.
Well, the train was specially chartered to carry the Republican lawmakers and their families to a retreat at the Greenbrier, a West Virginia resort. President Donald Trump was expected to deliver a speech at the retreat later today.
The train accident was a tough one, a tremendous jolt, and they're proceeding to their conference. We don't have a full understanding yet as to what happened, but it was a train hitting a truck going at a pretty good speed, and we'll have a full report as to what. It looks like the driver of the truck was killed, and it's very sad to see that. But they're going on to the conference, and I'll be going. It's in West Virginia, great state. I'll be going there.
News reports said the person who died was a passenger in the dump truck or the trash truck. No one on the train was seriously injured. Several others were taken to a hospital with minor injuries. A missile defense test carried out by the U.S. military that was supposed to shoot down an incoming dummy missile from Hawaii Wednesday has apparently failed. It comes amid heightened concerns about North Korea's developing missile and nuclear program. A previous missile intercept test last June also failed, but there was a successful test in early 2017. VOA's Victor Beatty spoke with Cedric Layton, a crisis management consultant and former Air Force intelligence officer, and asks, what's this all about?
This is one of the big issues with missile defense. Missile defense is right now, based on these test results and others that have really started since the program began in the 90s, is about a 40% success rate. So when you look at a success rate of that level, it becomes clear that there are going to be operational failures. Now, the idea of launching a test missile, the target missile, from an aircraft and having that intercepted is maybe not the most realistic replication of a potential launch from a country like North Korea, but it is one of the ways in which the U.S. tests its weapons systems. They do varying tests. The fact that this particular intercept was attempted from a shore-based battery as opposed to a shipborne battery is also different, and it, you know, in theory would be more stable being on the shore, but it is a you know, a slight difference from what would happen if it was the standard Aegis type missile. So what we're dealing with here is a series of tests under varying conditions that are at best very difficult to construct, but they are also not direct replications of exactly what the North Koreans can do.
Is this a new generation missile, or are we defenseless against any possible North Korean attack?
We are not defenseless against North Korean attacks, but what we have to understand is that any defense system that we currently have is not going to be foolproof unless we have complete knowledge and understanding of what the North Koreans are up to and get lucky in our attempt to shoot those missiles down.
Is this a new missile that they're... I know this was an anonymous source speaking about the exact type of missile, but are they working on a new generation missile?
So there are several blocks, several variants to these types of missile interceptors. So this Block 2A of the SM-3 is basically a version that the United States is using that is updated from previous versions. So it is a slightly different variant. It has basically different parameters, different ranges that it can use, and it's designed to be more accurate, but it's also one of those systems that is in essence, it's designed to make sure that you know, each type of missile, whether it's a short-range missile, an intermediate-range missile, or a long-range missile, that we have ways of getting at each one of those. And this was designed for short- and intermediate-range missiles as targets. And that's the system that is being used because we believe those are the missiles that are most likely to threaten forces in places like Japan, Korea, and Guam.
This missile failure came as the CIA director said publicly that he believes the North Koreans are months away from being a real threat to the U.S. mainland.
So these missile tests become really important when it comes to being able to shoot down any ballistic missile that is headed toward the United States or its allies. It has a certain deterrent effect, and of course a successful missile test would have been a much better message to be sending to North Korea. But North Korea should also be careful not to read too much into this failure, because if the reports are true that this missile test did not work as planned, there are still other ways in which the United States can go after their missile batteries, and they shouldn't be too sanguine about even mediocre results from U.S. tests.
That's Cedric Layton, crisis management consultant and former Air Force intelligence officer. A top State Department official says there's no chance in U.S. or change in U.S. policy toward Afghanistan after President Trump Monday ruled out, for now, negotiations with the Taliban. The U.S. official said the president was simply responding to a dramatic escalation in Taliban and other terrorist attacks on civilians. The Afghan government and the Taliban also reacted to Trump's comments, as VOA's diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports from the State Department.
Four deadly attacks in just over a week, including a massive suicide car bombing in Kabul that killed 150 people, prompted the Afghan government to call for a national day of mourning. The Taliban said it was behind the two attacks in Kabul. Afghanistan was on the agenda as President Donald Trump met with members of the UN Security Council Monday.
innocent people are being killed left and right, bombing in the middle of children, in the middle of families, bombing, killing all over Afghanistan. So we don't want to talk with the Taliban.
In the past, the U.S. has not ruled out including the Taliban in possible peace talks. Asked why the Taliban is now claiming responsibility for the massacres, Michael Kugelman told VOA.
The Taliban wants to weaken the Afghan state in any way possible. And it wants to do that now by proving that the Afghan state cannot protect its people. It cannot protect security. And that includes civilians.
President Trump stepped up the U.S. military presence in the country with 11,000 American troops now stationed there, 16 years after the U.S. invaded the country following the September 11th terrorist attacks. Some experts say the terrorist attacks on civilians are being planned across the border in Pakistan. Kugelman says the U.S. is likely seeking ways to increase the pressure on Pakistan to stop the attacks, but it has to walk a fine line.
I do not think the U.S. will declare Pakistan as a state sponsor of terror. That would be a very dramatic pressure point that would not only probably not work, but it would probably mean that Pakistan would retaliate by closing down supply lines on its soil used by NATO forces to access Afghanistan.
With this level of violence in Afghanistan, it does not appear that the longest conflict in American history will be ending anytime soon. Cindy Sain, VOA News, the State Department.
And you're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Hey there, this is Shauna Renee, the lady DJ and host of Soul Lounge. Every Sunday at 1400 UTC, I choose an artist that you and I love, and we break down their entire career while listening to their biggest hits. That's what we do here on the Soul Lounge. Once again, every Sunday, 1400 UTC, right here.
Hi, this is Victor Beatty, Managing Editor of VOA News. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
VOA's International Edition continues now. Well, UN Refugee Agency Special Envoy and actress Angelina Jolie called on NATO Wednesday to help stop the use of sexual violence as a weapon of war as the Hollywood star broadened her international efforts to protect women's rights.
This is not only a question of protecting women. This is a question of valuing women. As the Secretary General and I have discussed today, none of the challenges we face, from civil conflicts to the global refugee crisis, can be addressed without far greater attention to the needs, rights, and positive contribution of women. This has been a missing piece in so many of our efforts to prevent and resolve conflicts worldwide for generations.
Jolie, who earlier this week visited a Syrian refugee camp in Jordan, made her appeal to the U.S.-led alliance's top decision-making body, the North Atlantic Council in Brussels, and later met NATO military commanders. NATO, which counts 29 members and has missions from Kosovo to Afghanistan, has agreed to help report on sexual violence in war to help bring perpetrators to justice and challenge the idea that rape is unavoidable, an unavoidable aspect of conflict.
There can be no lasting peace and security without equal rights and participation for women in all societies. And those rights cannot be achieved in an environment where there is impunity for mass crimes against women and girls.
Jolie, a mother of six, who last year released her film First They Killed My Father about Cambodia's Khmer Rouge regime in the 70s, said she had met victims of sexual violence in conflict and was trying to be a voice for them. She's also expressing frustration at the lack of assistance available to victims. A rare Picasso painting will be auctioned off in London next week. The 1937 work titled Femme Aubere et à la robe quadrée, or Women in Beret and Czech Dress, inspired by the painter's French lover, Maria Therese Walter, is being shown in Hong Kong, Taipei, Los Angeles, and even New York before being sold. VOA's Zladika Hoek reports the painting's Hong Kong debut is a clear indication of the growing importance of the Asian art market.
The woman who inspired the painting began a relationship with Picasso when she was 17, and they had a daughter before he moved to another lover, Dora Maar.
It's not only a portrait of Marie-Thérèse Walter, but it's also a portrait of Dora Maar, who Picasso was also very much involved with from 1936. And it also is heavy with references to Guernica, which is, of course, his greatest masterpiece, also painted in 1937. And now in the Reina Sofia in Madrid.
Picasso is famous for his portrayal of women, many of them in vivid colors and angular shapes during his Cubist phase. The Sotheby's auction house has valued this one at $50 million.
I think a painting of this importance and quality is exceptionally rare. And there have been very, very few paintings that you could compare to the quality and importance of this picture that have appeared at public auction over the last few years.
The painting started its pre-auction tour in Hong Kong Tuesday. It will also be shown in Taiwan before heading for the United States.
Sotheby's has been bringing highlights from our New York and London Impressionist and Modern sales to Hong Kong for preview in the last 20 years. We have seen a steady growth in terms of buyers and the interest, culminating in last year in the November New York sale of the top 10 highest lots, five were actually purchased by Asian clients.
Last November, Leonardo da Vinci's painting Salvator Mundi was sold for a record price of more than $450 million at an auction in New York. Before that, Picasso's work, The Women of Algiers, held the world record for the most expensive piece of art sold at an auction, after fetching more than $179 million. Zlatica Hoek, VOA News, Washington.
Singer and musician Drake has just released a new single. International Edition Sarah Williams is joined by VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London to tell us all about it.
Today I'm going to bring you one of the hottest records on the planet. It's so hot, it debuted at number one in the U.S. and the U.K., and it belongs to Drake. It is a brand new song from Drake's brand new EP. The EP is called Scary Hours. And it came out a couple weeks ago, but the new single, which came out last week, number one already. And we're going to check it out right now. And the song is called God's Plan.
I don't want to die for them to miss me. Yes, I see the things that they wishing on me. Hope I got some brothers that outlive me. They going to tell the story was different with me.
Well, I'm a fan of Drake's. I like that song. It came out a couple years ago, Hotline Bling. But he's been very popular
yes.
in the last few years.
Well, he won two Grammys for Hotline Bling a couple of years back, and Views from the Six was his album. The last album he put out was one called More Life, which was kind of another EP. He's getting ready for a full studio album. He's been at work in his Toronto home studio, so we're anxiously awaiting the arrival of the new album. A lot of people were wondering, why wasn't Drake at the Grammys? He had a specific purpose, unlike people like Taylor Swift, who've not commented, or Ed Sheeran, who slept through the Grammys. But Drake said he was not showing up as a specific reason. He was boycotting the fact that the Grammys has not supported rap and hip-hop music in the past. Although this year was the hip-hop show, with the Jay-Z and Kendrick Lamar being nominated for the most awards for the evening. But nonetheless, that's why Drake stayed away. This is his first number one debut, and it's already breaking all kinds of records. 4 million streams the first day on Spotify. That's a new streaming record on Spotify. He's also number one on the iTunes chart right now because that song has been the most downloaded and listened to song on iTunes so far. And the guy's just hot. He just continues to roll out the hits. He's talked about working with Eminem, so there might be something going on there as well, but he's been hard at work putting out new music, and he promised new music in 2018, and he's delivered in a big way. And the song God's Plan is not the only song that he's got in the top 10. He's got another song that's out, Diplomatic Immunity, that is already in the top 10 as well. That's two top 10 songs from his new album, debuting in the first week. So that makes him only the fourth hip-hop guy to ever accomplish that feat. And by the record of streams that he's had, he surpassed Jay-Z. So that's a big feat, too.
Very impressive. Does he have any plans to tour?
I'm sure that a tour will come out usually after the album. Right now, they do limited shows, typically in the hip-hop world and in music in general. If they put on an EP or some new music, they do a few shows, four, five, six, seven shows. But when they go on the full one-year, two-year-long tour, that comes following a full studio album, which I'm sure we can anticipate sometime this year.
All right. Thanks a lot, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossings.
God's plan. God's plan. I hold back sometimes I won't. Yeah. I feel good sometimes I don't. Hey, don't. I finesse down Western Road. Hey, next. Might go down to G-O-D.
You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thanks so much for joining us. And thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
With a growing U.S. economy and a surging stock market at his back, President Donald Trump told leaders at the World Economic Forum that America is open for business and we are competitive once again. He noted that recently passed U.S. tax cuts and reforms are expected to raise the average American's household income by more than $4,000. The corporate tax rate was lowered from 35% to 21%, and a significant number of American companies are passing on bonuses to their workers in amounts as large as $3,000. The world's largest company, Apple, announced plans to bring $245 billion in overseas profits home to America. Eliminating unnecessary burdensome regulations is also a key factor, he said, in creating an environment that attracts capital, invites investment, and rewards production. President Trump encouraged his audience to come to America, where you can innovate, create, and build. But the president emphasized that his mission to put America first does not mean America alone.
When the United States grows, so does the world. American prosperity has created countless jobs all around the globe, and the drive for excellence, creativity, and innovation in the U.S. has led to important discoveries that help people everywhere live more prosperous and far healthier lives.
President Trump said that in order to have broadly shared prosperity, however, the international trading system must be reformed.
We cannot have free and open trade if some countries exploit the system at the expense of others. We support free trade, but it needs to be fair and it needs to be reciprocal, because in the end, unfair trade undermines us all.
President Trump pointed out that prosperity is impossible without security. That is why the United States is making historic investments in the American military and why it is asking friends and allies to invest in their own defenses and meet their financial obligations in order to make the world safer from rogue regimes, terrorism, and revisionist powers. We are all stronger when free, sovereign nations cooperate toward shared goals and shared dreams, President Trump declared. So together, let us resolve to use our power, our resources, and our voices, not just for ourselves, but for our people, to lift their burdens, to raise their hopes, and to empower their dreams, to protect their families, their communities, and their futures.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.